Let's give it up for Brad and the band one more time. Yeah, thanks, guys. You know, I know that song, you know, talks, you could be talking about a physical relationship, and yet this whole idea of not letting our love die for our neighbors, is something that, really is capturing the heart of where we're going to be going over this next few weeks. So it's great to have you here with us today. My name is Kurt. If we haven't had a chance to meet, I'm what's called a pastor here at Cross Point, and we're excited you're here, whether it's your first time with us or if you're here most weekends, welcome back. And anybody excited about summertime? Just anybody? Yeah. Summer's pretty exciting, right? When we get here, I love every season. I love winter is my favorite. And I was so bummed this year because we had virtually no winter. Did you notice that? Yeah, and some of you are like clapping over that, or you want to be. But, you know, summer for us, I mean, you know, we love hanging out in the backyard. Some of you spend time on the lake or at the lake house or, you know, a lot of time at Oleo Fields or Billericay Park. How about Grater's ice cream? I mean, nothing says summer like Grater's, right? For us, we one of the things we love is we have this kind of backyard connect with so many of our neighbors. It's like a playground every single night from Ultimate Frisbee to movie nights. In fact, that list Eric just went through of like how to be a good neighbor, I think we blew like two of the three this week. Of the first ones, you know, like the standards, like I shook a neighbor's hand. But, you know, don't let your dog be unruly. We blow that all the time. I mean, our dog bothers the whole neighborhood. Don't be noisy. We had an outdoor movie night Friday night till like 11:15, had the speakers blaring in the backyard. So, I mean, I don't know that we're good neighbors, but we have a lot of fun in the backyard. And so, and I know for some of us, it's not that way. You know, the reason you're not neighborly is because you're like, Kurt, if you just met my neighbors, you'd understand why we never go outside, right? Because maybe your neighbors are a little more like this right here.
So you're going to be my friend now? You think that you can buy me with your free chocolates that the insurance company sent?
No, I ate the insurance chocolates. I bought those special for you.
You don't want to be my friend. You're trying to manipulate me. I will not be manipulated.
Trust me, Rita, I'm not trying to manipulate you.
I don't believe you. I thought we'd put the past behind us, but I guess not. You hurt my feelings. You know what you are? You're a mean girl. You're a mean girl and a bully, and the whole neighborhood knows it.
What? I am not a bully. I'm nice. I sent you chocolates. I used the good stationery. I never even use stationery. You know what, Rita? You're the bully, and I'm not scared of you.
All right, so we got a Rita Glossner neighbor in their neighborhood, just out of curiosity. If they're here at Crossbow, don't raise your hand. Anybody? Yeah, you know, so that makes neighboring really, really hard. And so what we're going to do over these next 4 weeks is I really want us to enter into a social experiment for 4 weeks and explore what it means to leverage the power of the front yard, what it means to leverage the power of the backyard. Because we're entering a season where your neighbors are going to be out and about, whether you're in a condo, an apartment, or you live in a neighborhood, or even in the country, your neighbors, whoever you live close to, are more apt to be outside in the yard, and we have the ability to be change agents in our community. And what's cool about this is this really ties into one of the core principles, one of the core hills or values that Crosspoint is built on. In fact, our first two hills or values, if you go to our website, are to love God and love others. And Jesus talked a lot about this. In fact, Jesus, you know, said regularly, you know, I want you to, you know, love God, cultivate a love for God, and then you constantly need to be aware of how your life is loving on other people. And in fact, I want us to think about what it would look like if we just took Jesus' words seriously on this. And many of us were like, you know, man, I'm good with the God part, right? I mean, I can, even if we're exploring faith or in the emergent stages of faith, you're like, I'm good with God. It's all the people around my life that make, like, you know, loving them really hard. If God didn't, like, put all the people in my life, then I'd be great with God, right? Because the people are what messed me up. But God, there could even be an argument made that the way that we express our love to God is seen through the way that we love our neighbors. So we're going to dive in for these next 4 weeks into this concept. And some of us aren't going to like this very much. Some of us are going to, you know, be faced with a stark reality of whether we're really doing this or not, as I was about 12 or 13 years ago, of what it would look like in our community, in our neighborhoods, in our lives, if we just took seriously the words that Jesus says here, and we actually love the way he asked us to do that. So Now, this comes from the greatest commandment. We're going to look at this today. And the greatest commandment, you're probably familiar with it. You may have had a t-shirt with it, a bumper sticker or whatever. I mean, I'm never a fan of those things, but you've probably seen this phrase, love God, love others. And whenever we look at this passage, it always reminds me of how Jesus was always the smartest person in the room. I don't know if you noticed that, but I mean, Jesus always just has a way. I mean, he's part God and he's part human, so obviously he operates on a different level. But in this interaction that we're going to look at today, we see that Jesus really gives this strategic plan of how we could be, you know, change agents right in our own home, in our own neighborhood, and it can happen overnight, literally. And so Matthew 22, this is where we're going to start, and this is where we find Jesus. He's interacting with these religious leaders, and basically they're trying to trap Jesus. They're trying to trip him up. They're trying to, kind of get him in a place where he doesn't have an answer to their question. And so the question they ask him here, they say, Jesus, you know, if you know so much and you're so smart and you are God, as people are saying that you are, I mean, if you could sum up everything in the scriptures, which to us is the Old Testament, they didn't have the Old Testament and New Testament. The New Testament was still being like lived out at that time. But if you could like sum up everything in the prophets and the laws and everything that's been written about how we come to know God, you know, in a statement or two, what would that statement be? And so here's what Jesus says in Matthew chapter 22. He says, you shall love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, and with all of your mind. This is the great and first commandment. And they're like, yeah, good. We got that, Jesus. What else do you have? I mean, they're like, we get the God part. And then he goes on without even taking a breath into this next statement. And he says, the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. And you hear this just like moan, ugh, you know. Everybody's like, oh, we didn't know that was a part of it. He says, on these two commandments depend all the law and the prophets. I mean, think about this for just a moment. What if every single person that's sitting here this morning, is within earshot of my voice, whether you believe Jesus is who he says he is or still exploring who Jesus is, what if every single person were just to take Jesus at his word and love their neighbors? You know, one of the bothersome things I've kind of come across over these past few weeks is a guy by the name of Dave Runyon. He wrote a book called The Art of Neighboring. He's kind of initiated this social experiment that's sweeping across our country through church communities. And he said something in a conference call I was on recently. He said, you know, community leaders across our country, as he's been meeting with them, all across from the West Coast to the East Coast to the Midwest, he says community leaders basically are saying that there's no visible difference between those who call themselves followers of Jesus and those who don't in the way that they neighbor in their neighborhoods. About 12 years ago, I remember coming home from a conference where it was the first time I really had to come face to face with what it really means to love my neighbor. And it was a conference up in the Chicago area on doing life together and this whole idea of, you know, many times in Christian communities, we're all about connecting with other Christians and we drive halfway across town to meet in a small group and, you know, we're doing all kinds of good in multiple places, but we're missing the power of our own backyard. And I just remember on this drive home, it was about a 3.5-hour drive from the north side of Chicago, it just hit me. I had this aha moment, and I went, oh my word, I'm not doing this. I mean, I was an associate pastor at the time. I was doing student and children's ministry. I was deeply involved in people's lives. I was a part of, you know, counseling people at times on marriage things. I was involved in, you know, planning, programming for kids' ministries and student ministries. I was on some community initiatives. I served on a board of some things that were doing really good things in the community. And yet, I wasn't being intentional with the people who lived less than 50 feet from my own front door. And somehow, I'd figured a way out to be okay with that. I mean, in my mind, just, I'm like, oh, God, you know, you see me doing all these great things, and I'm touching people over here, and I'm a part of this, and I'm planning this, and I'm leading this. But and I just kind of worked it out that it was okay not to have an impact outside my front door. And I'm sure none of you do that, right? I mean, you don't look for that loophole. And all the reasons for neighboring, you know, it makes sense, right? I mean, you talk to any community leaders. When I served on the mental health task force here in Fishers over the last couple years, we talk about, you know, it takes everyone to address this mental health issue. It's not just the mental health professionals or the schools or the churches. It takes all of us. It takes a grassroots effort. Because some of the things we know is that people who have close bonds with their neighbors are actually healthier. When you have healthy relationships, that's part of the safety net when we need care, when we're really struggling. You know, we know in neighborhoods, you know, where neighbors know each other, that the crime rate is 50 to 60% less than neighbors who don't know each other. You know, we know that whenever, you know, catastrophe hits or natural disasters hit, one of the things we know is community systems get overwhelmed, and one of the first responders in any natural disaster are the people who live closest to you. So we get all of this, and yet so many times we fail to develop those kinds of connections. In fact, psychologists have been documenting this for some time. In the article, The End of Neighbors, Susan Pinker, who authored The Village Effect, she actually says this. She says, quality face-to-face contact is essential for social species. It fortifies immune systems, calibrates hormones, and increases chances of surviving heart attacks, strokes, AIDS, and cancer. Another psychologist, she talks about the distress and the breakdown in community and how this actually leads to the breakdown of individuals. She says one of the most destructive problems is the breakdown of community, and it is this breakdown that has often led to the breakdown of persons. This is fascinating because, you know, when we first started Crosspoint, we had a therapist come in and do some training, a counselor, just how to care for people with our Life Together group hosts, which our Life Together groups just wrapped up this past week. They'll kick off this fall. But, you know, he said something really fascinating to our hosts. He said, you guys are developing a level of community that's needed in the world today. In fact, he said, most people that you're connecting with will never need a therapist unless they go through something major traumatic because they have a group of people like you around who are just connecting and loving with them. He said, most people don't have that kind of influence in their lives, so they pay me $125 an hour to just sit and be their friend. So this psychologist says, though we may put many people around us, we're alone. Relationships have become superficial. There's no longer concern for the other. We're pressed by societal and financial pressures to focus on our own survival. We do not concern ourselves much with the plight of others except a few that we may call family and friends. And even then, our concern and attention is waning. Today, do we even know our neighbor, she asks. And do we even care to know our neighbor? You know, when we first moved into our neighborhood here in Fishers, we live about a mile from here. I'll never forget, we just moved in. We were looking to kind of do things different. We said, we really want to get to know our neighbors right off the bat. And so every time we'd walk out of our front door into the cul-de-sac, we'd see neighbors out there hanging out, you know, checking the mail, working in the yard. As soon as I'd walk out the front door, it's like everybody would go inside. Oh, yeah, that's kind of weird. You know, I got a pretty good self-esteem, so it didn't bother me too much. But, you know, one day I was in my garage, and I was down on the floor, and I was assembling a garage door opener, and I was getting ready to hang it, and I didn't have anybody to hang it. I didn't know how I was going to get this thing hung, because other than my brother and his wife lived behind us, and so I was probably waiting for them to come home. So I'm down on my knees, and all of a sudden, I feel this presence behind me. And then this voice comes out, and it says something like this. It goes, Curtis, I hear you're a pastor. And at first I thought maybe I had died and gone to heaven, right? Because I'm like, is that God? And no, it wasn't God. It was my neighbor, Tom. And Tom was this, like, you know, like 6'3" guy, and he's standing behind me. And of course, in my mind, I'm thinking, well, awesome, I get a chance to meet my neighbor. But then I'm like, how in the world did he know I was a pastor? And so at some point in the conversation, I asked him that question. I said, Tom, do you don't mind me asking, how'd you know I was a pastor? He said, oh, don't worry, word has got out on the cul-de-sac. Now, here was the problem with this. My neighbors, I felt like I was a dead weight. I mean, I felt like, for whatever reason, for about the next 6 months, I was in an uphill battle to help them see that us moving in as people who have faith and people who are following the heart of Jesus, that we actually felt like we were going to be an attribute to the community, not dead weight to the community. And so, you know, I struggled with this. And maybe that's because, you know, across the country, you know, whether you're Christian or not Christian, I mean, the neighboring effect doesn't really make a difference. In fact, some people are actually, you know, prone to not wanting Christian neighbors. You know, we get another fascinating picture of this in Luke chapter 10. Jesus gives us another really interesting picture. And this is fascinating because, you know, if you've grown up in the church, or even if you haven't, you've probably heard this story. And you know, if you have grown up in the church, you know, those of us that have grown up, you've become inoculated with the great commandment. I mean, it's easy to just kind of become numb to it. You hear it all the time. You're like, love God, love others. All right, got it. What else do you have, God? And yet, the reason that we hear about this so frequently, the reason Jesus continued to come back to this is the main thing is because this is a game changer. It's so simple, and yet it's so powerful. And so here's what he says in Luke chapter 10. It says, and behold, a lawyer stood up to put Jesus to the test, saying, teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life? And he said to him, what is written in the law? Now this is fascinating because this is, again, one of the things I love about Jesus. Again, he's always the smartest person in the room. I wish I could, like, do this when I was in conversations where I'm being asked a really pointed question. You know, Jesus just asks a question to a question, right? I mean, that's what he does here, and he does this on numerous occasions. He asks the person that asked the question to answer their question by answering a different question. And so Jesus says, how do you read it? And the guy goes on. It says, and he answered, you shall love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, and with all of your strength, and with all of your mind, and, without even taking a breath, your neighbor as yourself. And so, you know, he says this, and then it says, Jesus says to him, you've answered correctly. And then this next phrase, I've never noticed this before. Look at this next phrase. It says, do this, and you will live. I mean, how powerful is that? I mean, Jesus says, if you basically do what you just answered to me, then you'll live. It says, but desiring to justify himself, he said to Jesus, and who is my neighbor? And so this guy comes to Jesus, and he gives this very simple, straightforward question. And Jesus asks him a question back, and he basically repeats the answer and helps the guy basically boil it down to two very simple concepts, love God and love your neighbor. And you know what this guy's first thought is? His first thought is, how can I get out of this? It's the very first thing he thinks. How can I get out of this? He's like, Jesus, if you would just meet my neighbors, if you'd come home and barbecue on my patio and stand around the grill for a bit, if you could just see my neighbors and how annoying they are, you would see why this is not a good idea. All right, you should have stopped loving God. But Jesus doesn't do that. Jesus, if you could see how much I'm a part of some really cool things over here and serving over here, I'm on this board in the community, I don't have time to be in my back patio. And Jesus says, love God and love your neighbors. And his first thought is trying to justify himself. I mean, basically, he's like, how can I redefine who my neighbor really is? And he's looking for a loophole. That's what he's doing. Aren't you so glad we've progressed over 2,000 years and we don't do this anymore? Nobody's looking for a loophole in here, right? No. Well, this was me. 12, 13 years ago, pre-Crosspoint, this was me. I was a pastor. I was involved in all kinds of great stuff. I was, you know, living in a neighborhood, driving halfway across town to my small group. I was, you know, serving people 20 miles from me. I was, you know, part of community initiatives, serving the poor, you know, leading people, involved with kids, parents, families. And yet, I only knew the first names of three homes of the eight homes within a 100-foot radius around my house. And so in this story, Jesus takes this definition of neighbor, and he takes it from here, I mean, this tight-knit right around me, and he blows it up to here. And he tells the story of the Good Samaritan right here. Now, whenever we hear the story of the Good Samaritan, we have to operate off of an assumption, because this is what Jesus operated off of. See, Jesus is talking to a first-century Jewish culture right here, a first-century Jewish audience, and he's making the assumption that people are already neighboring among their small, tight-knit communities, because that's how they lived. That's how these families lived. They were very tight-knit with the people around them. And so he's blowing this up. He's blowing the story up from real close. And he's saying, your neighbor goes beyond that to real large. He's kind of like going to the AP level, to like the master's level, you know, like graduate level, neighboring level. All right, this is what he's doing right here. And so he goes on to tell the story of the Good Samaritan. He says, you know, basically, you know, anytime, listen, you see somebody that has a need in front of you and you step in and you meet that, guess what? That's neighboring. You know, he says, anytime, you know, you're traveling somebody and you see somebody on the side of the road and they have a need and you can fill that need, guess what? That's neighboring. Doesn't matter who they are. If they're a coworker, it doesn't matter if they're, you know, a foreigner. It doesn't matter if they're a terrorist. It doesn't matter if they're, you know, your literal neighbor right outside your front door. He said, whenever you meet a need, you're neighboring. And see, here's how you and I, here's how we, when we read this, when we hear this, you know, here's how we process this story. And here's how I'd process this story for most of my life, right? We read that story, we see the Good Samaritan, and we go, oh my word, guess what? I'm neighboring all the time. Oh my word, I just helped somebody, you know, down in Indianapolis today. And, you know, I was traveling in Ohio yesterday, and I paid for somebody's meal because they didn't have a meal. Oh my word, I'm neighboring all the time. And we do this little mental gymnastics like move in our brains where we just all of a sudden make a little switch and we get less worried about the right here and the right now. We're like, oh man, I'm doing this all over the place. I'm neighboring all the time. Because that's what the story says, right? And see, here's the problem with this. The problem is, you know, when everyone's your neighbor, then often nobody's your neighbor. See, when we turn neighboring into a metaphor, Right? Well, this was like my neighbor. I mean, even though they were over here, then you know, that's like a metaphor for your neighbor, and you're like offering metaphoric love to that person, and metaphorically, you're doing really, really well, in your mind at least, you know, as we try to twist it all around. I mean, I'm like a rock star neighbor when I do that. And yet the people less than 100 feet from my front door of my house were lonely, some of them dying for relationship. And I drive by their house every single day with a wave to go off and serve somebody 20 miles away. And so oftentimes when we aim for everyone, guess what? We end up loving no one. And I know what some of you might be thinking. If you know the story of the Good Samaritan, you're like, well, Kurt, you obviously don't know the text. You obviously don't really understand the story, because what Jesus was doing was saying that, hey, all these people, when I serve somebody I'm working with, I'm neighboring. And when I come alongside a family, you know, that I met on our softball team, and we just come alongside and support them, I'm neighboring. Or when I offer a cup of cold water on the other side of the world, I'm neighboring. And if you're thinking that, you're exactly right. All right, that's exactly what Jesus was wanting us to see when he blew it out like this, but not at the exclusion of the people he put right outside our front door. See, this is the loophole we tend to fall into. We've got all this good stuff happening, and we justify, oh, I'm on this board, and I'm serving here, and I'm part of this, and I'm serving, you know, this family on our sports team. It's all good stuff, but imagine for just a moment what your neighborhood, what your community would look like if for the next 3 months, of these next 3 months of summer, June, July, and August, if you just experimented with taking seriously what Jesus says to literally love your neighbor right outside your front door. So I want to walk us through, give you kind of a tool to experiment with this, because this is really going to be a social experiment over these next few weeks. And so, you know, when you think about your home, you receive this Art of Neighboring thing in your weekly. Go ahead and take that out. We're going to bump up the house lights a little bit. And I want you to take this out and grab a pen. And I want you to use this as kind of a practical framework for thinking about how can I love the people that God has positioned right around my physical home. Because see, here's the deal. You know, you basically have one of three relationships with the people that live closest to your house, right? You're either a stranger, you know, with them, you're an acquaintance with them, or you're in relationship with them. So it's one of those three things, all right? One of those three things is true of the eight closest homes or families to your home. And so here's the big idea for today. Knowing someone's name is a really big deal, all right? Knowing your neighbor's name is a really big deal. All right, there's an enormous difference when you walk down your street and you're like, hey, man, how's it going? Oh, good, man, it's good to see you. And you wave and you keep going. Versus when you walk up and see your neighbor and you go, hey, Dave, how's it going? Man, it's awesome, Kurt. How are you doing today? See, those are two totally different interactions. And so with your block map right here, what I want you to do is I want you to think about your neighborhood, and I want you to put a circle around, like in your mind, around the eight closest homes to your house. All right? Remember when you're in kindergarten, your parents like drew a line, like you can't go past these houses, and it's like this was like your, anybody else's parents do that when you're in kindergarten? Yeah, okay, yeah. So think of like you're back in kindergarten, all right? And put a circle around those homes, and I want you to think of your house being in the middle right here, all right? So this right here is Kurt and Julie. This is our home. And then I want you to think of those eight homes around your house, and I want you to just fill in the first names of the adults that live in those eight homes. All right? So you can go ahead and go. So, you know, I'm going to put Jonathan and Kristen and Chris and Darcy. Just fill these in. And don't cheat, by the way. Don't ask your spouse, you know, hey, what are their names? Like, if you don't know them, all right, like, don't cheat. Don't go to Google and, like, do a reverse address lookup, all right? Oh, yeah, that's their name. Or like, here's what some people like to do. They like to pull in somebody from 20 houses down and, like, squeeze them into the corner right here, you know, just so they feel like they know somebody. You know, just write their names. All right. Man, it sounds like you guys are working. Now, you need a little more time? See a lot of eyes looking up. All right, you done? Either you don't know any of your neighbors or you know them really, really well. All right, so let's just for fun, let's do a little social experiment. All right, as you look at your block map, if you can name all the adults in all 8 of the homes closest to your front door, raise your hand. Yeah, look around, look at that. Maybe 3 or 4% of us, which is about average for the United States of America in churches. In fact, less than half of people across churches all across America can actually name half of their neighbors. And see, here's the thing. In order to love someone, in order to do what Jesus asks us to do, to love God and love others, we've got to know their name, right? I mean, in order to pray for somebody, you've at least got to know their first name, right? I mean, in order to take Jesus' words seriously, it starts with something as simple as just knowing their name. So here's what I want to challenge you to do this week, all right? I want you to, this is actually one of your next steps. If you look on the back of your connection card, you've actually done one of the next steps. Congratulations, you filled out the block map. The next step is I want you to, this week, I want you to look at the holes on your block map, all right? You may know what house that represents. I want you to place this somewhere where you're going to see it. You know, it's got a magnet on it. You can place it on your refrigerator. You can, you know, wherever you're going to see it regularly and your family can orient around it. In my home, we're going to use my wife's because it'll be legible, all right? And so, but this week, when you're out mowing your yard or when you're out going for a run or you're coming, driving in from work at the end of the day and pulling into your driveway, and when you see that person that's empty on your block map right here and you don't know their name, all right, what I want you to do is, you know, when you see them at the mailbox getting their mail at the end of the day, I want you to walk over to them and I want you to, you know, like this is going to be the easiest and hardest thing you're going to do all week long, all right, but at the same time, it's going to be the hardest and the easiest. You're just going to go over and say something like, listen, I'm kind of embarrassed. I've lived next to you for like 2 years, and you've told me your name probably like 3 times, and I cannot remember it. But my name's Kurt. Can you tell me your name again and shake their hand and just learn their name? Or maybe it's something like you know, I'm embarrassed to say we've lived next to each other for like 5 years, and I've just done a quick, hey, man, how's it going? I've never thought to ask your name. And just find out their name, and then go home and fill it in. You know, fill it in right here on your block map, so that you know their names. All right, so you actually have this in front of you. All right, go back and write it down, and understand this is like a Trojan horse. All right, I'm kind of using this to suck you in a bit. All right, because here's what's going to happen. All right, this is a game changer. This is a game changer. It really is. I mean, think about this. This is going to change the way that you live. Because see, here's how this works. It goes from, hey man, how's it going? Good. All right, see you later. Have a good day. To, hey Dave, how's it going? Oh, it's good. How are you? Good, man. Thanks for asking, Kurt. To, hey Dave, you know, I've got a couch in my loft. I need to move downstairs. Would you mind giving me a hand bringing that in? Oh no, I'd be happy to. To, hey, Dave, man, I noticed that you've been home a lot lately during the day. Are you on vacation or is everything okay? Anybody sick at your house? Everything okay? And all of a sudden, you're beginning to form a relationship simply by being available, knowing their name, and being able to ask questions. And it takes time. I mean, this doesn't develop overnight, but it starts with the first step of knowing their name. It starts when you look at your grid and you go, oh my word, I don't know the names, the first names of the people, the 8 closest people to my house. And as you begin to fill these in, you begin to reconcile what it means to not only love God, but to love your neighbor because you know their name. And you begin to learn more about them. And you can begin to become intentional in doing the very simple thing that Jesus asked you to do. Now, maybe you filled your whole block map in. I mean, I know my whole block. I've got one home in the middle of a bunch behind us that just moved that are pretty new neighbors to us. But, you know, maybe you need to expand your circle. I mean, maybe that's what God's nudging. Maybe for most of us, just filling in the block map. But maybe for others of us, it's an okay. I need to broaden my circle and make it larger. And I'm going to tell you something. When you do this, I'm going to warn you. When you do this, it's going to ruin you, in a good way. All right, in a really good way. In our backyard, here's kind of the aerial view of my backyard, and we've got the coolest backyard. And I don't just say that because a lot of my neighbors attend here. But we really have a pretty cool backyard. And so when you know, this is the circle. This is our house right here on the cul-de-sac. And this is kind of the circle. We spend a lot of time right out here in the backyard. And it's the coolest thing. And in fact, just in the past week, we've had like 4 Ultimate Frisbee, you know, championships all the way to dusk. We've watched a movie on the lawn Friday night. We've been on multiple patios, you know, grilling out, hanging out, talking. Our kids know that anytime that they're home alone and it's storming, they can go to any of these neighbors' homes, you know, right here. I mean, this is Chris and Darcy. This is Jonathan and Kristen. This is Maria, our neighbor, our widowed neighbor. This is Jason and Christy. This is Adejo and Linda. This is my brother. My brother and his wife live right behind us. We got a really cool connection there. Dave and Angie. This is the home that just moved in. Used to be Mike and Danielle. This is Dave and Jenny. This is Sandra right here. Maybe right here. And so, you know, every now and then we think about, you know, man, it'd be nice to have like a different house. I don't know if you guys ever have that thought. Like, we don't have a fireplace. We'd love a fireplace. We don't have a basement. We'd love a basement. You know, I love a third bay in my garage. I don't know if that's ever going to happen. And every now and then our kids will even be like, man, you know, what if we moved here, moved there? And it always comes, you know, it always brings us back. What happens right here? What happens right here? And we tell our kids all the time, you likely never in your life again will have that special thing that you have with all of your neighbors right here. And what's cool about this is many of these people actually come to Cross Point now. I mean, it didn't start that way. It's just my brother right here and his wife. But one by one, as we've gotten connected and just shared life together, as different people have gone through tensions and troubles and transitions, you know, it just naturally comes up. Well, hey, you know, we may check out your church. And it's really a cool thing. And so we think, man, we got to move now because we need a whole new set of neighbors to connect with. But something really cool happens. And again, I want you to imagine, what does your grid look like, and what would happen if for the next 3 months you just focused on what it would mean to be intentional to retain and learn your neighbor's names? And what might happen, what God might do as you begin to love others around you? One more verse that's really cool that ties into this, gives us some great perspective on why you live where you live. Take a look at Acts 17. This is the Apostle Paul, and he's talking at the Acropolis right here. And here's what he says. He says, from one man he has made every nationality to live over the whole earth and has determined their appointed times and the boundaries of where they live. How cool is that? God has actually appointed the boundaries within which you're going to live. He did this so they might seek God and perhaps they might reach out to find him, though he is not far from each one of us. You know what Paul's saying right here? Paul's saying that you've been placed in your neighborhood, right? You were placed there for a very specific reason. And God put the people around you for a very specific reason. And so that, and this is so cool. I love the posture of what Paul's saying right here. He's saying that you were placed there so that people in your neighborhood right around you, when they begin to reach out to God, guess what? They're going to have handles right there close to them to grab onto, to show them what it looks like. And you're the handle. You're the handle. You've been put there for a very specific reason. See, you don't live in your neighborhood for the reason you thought you lived in your neighborhood, do you? I mean, you thought you lived there because, you know, you really liked the elementary school, or it had 4 baths instead of 3, or 5 bedrooms instead of 3, or, you know, you had a really cool backyard, or it has great curb appeal. You know, any number of things, but we have to see that Paul says, no, God actually put the parameters around where you were going to live. You know why? Because when people around you begin to explore God, you're going to be the handle that they're going to grab onto. And when you begin to let that sink in, listen, this changes things. This changes how you drive into your neighborhood. It changes how you drive out of your neighborhood. And it doesn't mean you're going to like all your neighbors. It doesn't mean you're going to like be best friends with all your neighbors, all right? I mean, listen, some of your neighbors, they don't have time to have relationships with you, all right? I mean, they're way too busy. Some of you don't have time. We're going to talk about time next week and how we've got to make time if we want to connect. But I want us to imagine what it would look like if through the next 3 months, every single one of us here connected at Crosspoint, if we just decided to learn and retain the names of our neighbors so we could begin to pray for them, begin to love them, begin relationship with them. In fact, the impact wouldn't just be hundreds of people. The impact wouldn't be even 1,000 or thousands. It would be tens of thousands. Take a look at this. Look at how this breaks out. I mean, we have approximately 550 family units here at Crosspoint. It's probably on the low end, but we kind of picked a conservative number. If those 550 homes each said, I'm going to learn and retain the names of 8 of my neighbors. And say in each of those homes, there's an average of 4 people per home. Then just out of this community, you'd be touching 17,600 people by simply doing one of the simplest things Jesus asked us to do, to love him and to love others. And who knows where it goes from there? In fact, some of you may be here today because somebody cared enough to ask you your name, to start a relationship, eventually maybe invite you to church. Maybe they shared what God had been doing in their life and you said, man, I need that. And somehow you've made your way here. What would it look like if we just were intentional about this? So that's your challenge this week. I want you to take this home, place your block map up, and just be intentional to fill in the 8 closest homes. All right. Now, as we wrap up today, we're gonna have the opportunity for baptisms today. Anybody like baptisms? Yeah, man, we get excited about baptisms. Now, here's the thing. We don't have any planned baptisms today, all right? We did a number of weeks of baptism about 2 months ago, and we had some people that said, hey, we couldn't participate, and so we wanted to get another one in before we got deep into summer. And so I don't know if we're going to have baptisms today, but I'm going to be in the water here in just a moment. But the reason we provide this opportunity periodically is because we believe there's something really powerful. If you've come into a relationship with Jesus and you've received his grace and his love into your life and you've began that relationship, the very next thing Jesus asks us to do is to be baptized. It's like an outward expression of something that's taken place in our hearts. And we just believe that there's something really powerful when we're courageous enough to boldly say, I'm going to get in this water because Jesus did it and he asked me to do it as an expression of saying, God, I'm with you and you're with me. In fact, as we think about what it means to be bold and be influential in our neighborhoods and with the homes right around us, maybe the very first step for some of us is to say, God, I'm going to express my faith through baptism, and I'm just going to declare that I'm with you, God, and you're with me, and this is kind of my gateway to saying I want my influence to continue to permeate around me. I love this line from John, the Gospel according to John, as he's kind of explaining who Jesus is. This is from the Message translation. It says, the Word, meaning Jesus, the Word became flesh and blood and moved into the neighborhood. And what I love about that is, you know, when you become a Christian, when you receive God, when you receive Christ into your life, you know, he takes all of your stuff, all of your selfishness, all of your gossip, all of the stuff you've accumulated, all the sin that you've accumulated over your life. He takes that and he removes it and nails it to the cross. That's what he did. He nailed it to the cross. And he replaces all that with his goodness. And so this verse is still happening today. When the Word became flesh, the Word, meaning Jesus, when he enters into our flesh, guess what? Jesus continues to move into the neighborhood. He continues to move into people who are broken. He continues to move into people who are desperate for relationships, who are spiritually broken. And it's through you. And so, you know, if baptism is something that's been on your radar, or if you've recently became a Christian, or maybe it's years and years ago, but you've never taken the step for water baptism, we just believe this is a gateway to open up more and more of what God wants to do through your life. And so I'm going to ask you to stand with me, and we're going to sing some songs here. And as we do this, you may not have, you know, came in here preparing to be baptized today. I mean, you may not even know we were doing baptism. So we just feel like this is something we need to offer very regularly for those who are ready to take this step. But let me tell you something. If you just feel that nudge in your heart, you're just feeling that pull on your heart as I'm talking about this, that's probably the Holy Spirit saying, hey, maybe you need to take this step today. Of just publicly expressing, Jesus, I'm with you and you're with me. And so we've got a baptism team. They've just exited the venue and they're in the commons. They're ready to serve you. They've got, you know, shorts and t-shirts and clean, brand new undergarments. Not just clean, but new, all right? It's brand new. And we got hair product because you need to look good, right? You need to look good when you walk out of here. So like we got everything you need. We don't want there to be any barriers to you taking the step to follow Jesus and express your faith. And we know many people have taken that step. And if you're here today and you want to take the next step, then we invite you into the waters of baptism. So let me pray for us. Heavenly Father, we thank you for this enormous, enormous, enormous thing you've given us of this opportunity to be in connection with you, to love you, and to love others. And God, I just pray that you would give us a passion to carry this thing out well, especially over these next 3 months. Just break our hearts for our neighbors. God, I pray that you would break our hearts for the people you have placed right around us. Give us the courage to live the kind of lives that point to you, but God, also that help people see that there's light in the neighborhood because you're living in us. And God, for some of us today, maybe it starts right now by taking a step of baptism. Maybe we've never publicly declared that. You know, you've done something significant in our hearts. We've received your grace, and we're so thankful for that, but it's now time to say, hey, God, I'm with you, and you're with me, and we're ready to step into the waters and publicly declare this. because we firmly believe this just opens up new opportunities to greater things. In fact, God, if there's any of us here today who are just being warm to you and we've never really taken the step to receive you into our lives, or maybe we once knew you and we've just kind of wandered away, God, that can all change right now. God, if you've just been working on our hearts and you're drawing us towards you right now and we're ready to take a step of faith into receiving from you, God, then that can just happen by saying, God, I want to receive you. I want to know you in my life. I want to know your grace. Would you cover my sin? Would you cover my brokenness, my guilt, my shame, my indiscretions? And would you fill me, God, with all of your goodness? Help me to live the way that honors you, God. Just teach me one day at a time. So God, whatever our next step is, over these next few moments, God, we just pray that we'd be courageous to take it and to follow you in it. We pray, amen. All right, so we're going to sing three songs, and if at any point over these three songs you'd like to be baptized, you can exit the venue, and our team will help you get prepared, and let's sing together.